So, Hare Krishna, we are ready to start. I want to welcome all of you for this workshop. This morning, I wanted to discuss a little bit more how it is so important to see things from the spiritual perspective. The idea in this Bhagavatam verse was that Krishna sees things from the spiritual perspective, and a devotee who receives Krishna's presence in the heart also perceives a reality from the spiritual perspective. After the workshop, one Mataji came to me with a profound realization, and I have asked her if she would feel comfortable to share her realization, and she said yes. So I request our Kamala Sundari, Kamala Vati, to maybe come forward. Vrita Sena, maybe you can give her the microphone, and then you can speak this realization, which I found very profound, and in fact it was my desire.
I just realized that Krishna only sees us as the spirit soul. Like, he doesn't see our anarthas or our material mind or thinking, but just like sees us as spirit soul. So in the same way we can see as Krishna sees, means that we see all living beings as spirit soul. And also, like when in that verse, when the moon is shining on Ravani, so when the moon, like Lord Nityananda is described as like moon-like face, and his lotus feet are shining like the moon. So we're acting in such a way that, you know, through chanting attentively and saying prayers that are, you know, from the cyclic succession of being humble and serving in that consciousness, then Krishna shines the moon on us, and then we can actually feel his presence, like the moon is shining on Ravi. So I just kind of realized that obviously I haven't been doing that, and I pray that I could be able to have that awareness and consciousness so that I can see everyone's spirit soul the way Krishna sees us as spirit soul.
Thank you. Thank you very much. As you enter that sacred space in the heart, which we will now try to do in this workshop, this spiritual, you know, you could either call it a space, or you can also describe it like a level. I'm, for instance, now, due to the sitting arrangement, sitting on a slightly higher level. I'm here with you, and you can all come to me. You can sit also on this level, but you would have to make some steps in order to go to this elevated seat and on which I'm now addressing you. So in the same way as when we want to enter the sacred space, a few steps are necessary, and I will tell you three steps which you can do. I have been doing this since 15 years personally, and they are very, very profound and deep, and I've shared them with many of my God brothers who have adopted this method. They are based on Prabhupada's books, obviously, and found in our tradition. It's not some just thinking. But before I come to this, I would really love you to look at this sacred space through the eyes of another tradition. Have you noticed that sometimes quotations, perspectives of other traditions help to see, help you to see more clearly what's in your own tradition? Have you seen that? It's something which I think we Westerners are apt to do, that we approach things from our way of perspective. And I found especially the writings of people who are described in the Western world as mystics. I don't think they are mystics in this. They just have spiritual experiences. They're very useful. And there is this particular mystic called Teresa of Avila. She was walking a very, very fine path during the Spanish Inquisition. Her life was always at risk because she had experiences which were really not described in the institutional church. They were new. And she always, on every knock at the door, had to be afraid, maybe that's the people who will pull me out of my little cell, they call the cells, little rooms, and then burn me to the stake. That was her situation. And in this situation, under great personal risk, she was summarizing her own experience in this book, The Interior Castle. And there she describes how the spiritualist is approaching the level where he can meet God. She in her gives a vivid example of entering into a castle with many rooms. I do not know, in America, do we have castles? Not so many, maybe, or Palace of Gold is a small castle, yes. Thank you. I'm preaching together with Gadadha, a wonderful devotee, and one of our projects is the Veda Academy, and we always base our academy in castles. So I have lived for a lot of my life in castles, and even now outside of Berlin there is a castle, the Dharma Castle, which is owned by the Veda Academy, and I have a room there, so I know the architecture of castles. So in castles you find something like mansions or apartments through which you can walk to go to the more interior places of the castle. So Teresa of Avila gives us this picture, this imagery, that we enter into our inner space by first going through a few rooms which are before. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Madhurya Kadambini does not use this imagery, but he talks of levels which we pass. You all know these levels very well. They are gleaned from Rupa Goswami's groundbreaking work, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It goes from Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha to Bhajana Kriya and so on. You pass through stages, through levels, or you could also say through spaces or rooms of experience if you want to give it a spatial imagery. Now, this is very common to spiritual traditions, that you go through something and then you leave that, in some cases you leave something behind, like for instance in our tradition you leave your bad things behind on the level of anatta nivritti. You leave your anattas behind. So Teresa of Avila It's the same thing it describes. If you want to enter into your sacred space, then you will do that through prayer and humility. Before entering the castle, the heat and light from within reach the souls only in a faint and diffused form. The soul still is cold and dim. You know, as you enter into a spiritual experience, you see something is coming. You have these experiences in relationship with devotees, in reading and so on, but it's still dim and it does not yet reach you as much as you wish. And then you enter through the first rooms in the basement of the castle. If you enter in the Dharma castle, the first rooms are usually underwater. They are now in the basement. You can go through a very aristocratic staircase. But in old times, you had to go through the basement. And in that basement of the castle, there are numerous reptiles which disturb your peace and prevent you from seeing the beauty of the building. So the souls who are starting their journey are in desperate need of grace. They're looking for grace, but still they are to some degree still in love with the venomous creatures, I'm citing Teresa, outside the castle, and need a long and searching discipline before they can make progress. Do you recognize your own life here, or your beginning stages in Krishna consciousness? You enter and you wish to go deeper, but alas, you still have all these anattas and the material attachments which give pain to your heart and are not making you at ease, don't allow you any peace. As you enter your spiritual life, you take a lot of your stuff with you, and that is when we quarrel and when we are giving troubles to each other. At that time, it's really our little animals which we have taken along with us, or our anattas. So finally, after you have gone through everything, Teresa describes you get a clarity in your prayer. It's no longer that you say, Krishna, let me control my senses and help me to overwhelm my anattas. At that time, you are clear of these things, and your prayer comes automatically from the spiritual platform. Let me love you, Krishna. Let me please you, Krishna, and so on. And through this, you receive something like a spiritual union, a yoga, bhakti yoga with the Lord, and have the darshan of the Lord. She says like this in her language, there's a complete transformation, ineffable and perfect peace, no higher state, it's no longer conceivable, save that of the beatific vision in the life to come. Now, the way she describes her journey is she is propelled forward by a deep longing. Do you recognize this principle? Vipralamba, the mood of separation. So in the beginning of our spiritual journey, it's very, very important to understand that we are spiritual souls, spiritual beings, and we have to understand we have not yet reached the perfection of our journey. We need to enter the realm of humility. This is a little bit from Teresa of Avila. I just wanted to show you that here's a devotee who needs a key to enter the inner space. I hope you find it soon. So this experience is very much our own experience. And I wanted to preface of what we are doing here by telling you this is the spiritual journey. It's the realistic spiritual journey. It's felt by sincere spiritualists all over the universe. It has a universal touch to it. It's not particular to only the members of our Gaudiya Vaishnava faith. There are appropriations and equal things happening in all the tradition. And for me, this is something which gives me a lot of faith. So the sacred space is not only addressed in different religious and spiritual cultures, but strangely enough, even in psychology. And I promised you something. In psychology in Europe, you have three founding fathers, Sigmund Freud, and two of his earlier disciples disagreed with his somewhat, let me say, very limited understanding of the human mind. They were Mr. Adler and Reich, and also a less known person called Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl was a very spiritually minded person who was put into the KZ. KZ is a concentration camp of the Nazis. But he discovered something which became later the major theme of his work. He discovered that even when his Nazi tormentors got on his case, he could go into a space inside, he discovered that, where he was absolutely not at all disturbed or even impressed. You know, they would do things like disrobe him, take his cloth away from him and apply electrodes and electric charges to vulnerable parts of his body, and he would just be able to withdraw into that space and from there look upon everything from a neutral observer position. Later he came out with a philosophy which reads like this. I will repeat in his own words. Between the stimulus, you know, when something happens to you, that's a stimulus which stimulates you, and the response, there is a space. In that space is our own power to choose our response. And in our responses lie our growth and our freedom. Something happens to a person who doesn't know about the inner space, he reacts. Something happens to a person who knows about the inner space and he doesn't immediately react. He observes. And then from a observer position, which is a spiritual position always, you will see that a little later, he reacts in a much better way. In that little space lies, according to Viktor Frankl, all your human freedom. You can't change what happens to you. It will happen. By the loss of your karma. But what you can do is, you can enter the observer role or your sacred space from where you see it, and then wisely respond to it. And by these responses, you will change your whole life. You will live a total different life. Now, this was a little, I could take you in my other seminars, I intend to do a much better tour through different thoughts, thought systems and spiritual systems. But I would like to stop here learning from the good things other traditions and thought disciplines found. I would like to go back into my own tradition where I feel most at ease. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the great devotee, some say he is Rupa Goswami, come again. That's how much he is venerated in the Gaudiya tradition. He writes, O most merciful Lord, you are realized as bliss itself by those who see internally rather than externally. So he says now what it means to see internally, and as you will listen on, you will detect that he speaks about the sacred inner space. You exist, my Lord, as an experience of bliss in Vaikuntha without covering, but you also exist in the temple of the heart, Hridaya Mandira, temple of the heart, whose door is closed by ignorance. This door to the temple of the heart, however, can be unlocked by Paramahansa Dharmena, by the processes of Bhakti Yoga. You appear, along with the fearless word of Vaikuntha, in the heart, when the door of the heart has been unlocked. So, in our Sacred Space Seminar, part two, this is part one, where we approach the subject. We teach the processes of bhakti, which specifically help you to get rid of that cover of ignorance, which closes the door to the temple of the heart, where the Lord of fearlessness exists together with you as the soul. So here, in this little workshop, I would like to bring you to that sacred space, your own sacred space, and I will do this, if you permit me, by taking you on an experiential journey. I request you to trust what I do and know that I've taken it from our own tradition and from Srila Prabhupada's processes and just processed it a little bit, so make it, in order to make it something experiential. We have the following steps. Let's see if it is here. The first point is become conscious of yourself as the soul and not the body. Then observe from the soul's position your environment and the situations which happen in your life. And the third step is connect with the divine. I will not teach this today, because two are already sufficient. Tomorrow in our workshop, we will learn about how to establish a higher connection. It's very, very wonderful. Here, you will only learn the preparatory steps. Today. I would like to read to you something which made a difference in my life and got me what? Louder?
Use the mic.
Thank you very much. I would like to say why I'm so absolutely insistent here to take you through the very first step, that is to become aware that you are a soul and not the body. And you will see as we do this, it will be an experience. Long ago, I read in a book of Srila Prabhupada, it was one of these small little books, Beyond Birth and of Death, something which struck me. Who has read Beyond Birth and Death here? Oh, many. That's God. Or some. So Prabhupada opens this. This book opens with a sentence which startled me. The very first step in self-realization is realizing one's identity as separate from the body. I'm not this body, but am spiritual soul. Is an essential realization for anyone who wants to transcend death and enter into the spiritual world beyond. It is not simply a matter of saying, I'm not this body, but of actually realizing it. This is not as simple as it may seem at first. Although we are not these bodies, but are pure consciousness, somehow or other, we have become encased with the bodily dress. So, Srila Prabhupada here says that it is not enough to theoretically know this, but you have to practically realize it. It's not simply a matter of saying I'm not this body, but of actually realizing it. My dear devotees, ask yourself the question, how often do you live on this platform of realization that you are an eternal, transcendental soul, absolutely different from the body and the mind? Ask yourself, be a little bit observant of your spiritual life, monitor it. I know that some of you, the older, had out-of-body experiences and saw their body lying next to the car in which the accident took place. I have spoken with devotees, but you know, the bodily illusion sometimes pulls us again in so that we don't realize I'm different from my vehicle, my body, and we act in a false life, in a false dream. So today, I really want to bring you to that stage where you feel it, and I request you now to go with me into the journey. Are you ready?
Yes!
Wow, very good. I think something is wrong with the New Vrindavan current. Yeah. Oh yeah. So we will first bring a little energy into your body, because for the meditation, you need to be absolutely alert. I request you to take your hands, just stretch a little bit like this, and imagine a good friend pulling it back, their hands back, as if you are. You want to open your chest, all right? And from that position, bring your arms again back. There's a very comfortable stretch going on. Now, on an inhale, please raise your hands like this. I will make it for you. Please look. Join me, please. Spread your hands when you go up and make a fist when you go down. Try to breathe in very nicely. We have made a lot of air for you. Even if out of unexperience in yoga you feel a little strain, it's no problem. You will see its wonderful results come. Five more. Five. Four. Three. Two. One. Now put your hands for the men. Please put your left hand underneath your navel and the right hand above the left hand. And those of you who are ladies, please place your right hand underneath your navel and the left hand above the right hand. And just feel into your body. Breathe calmly through the nose, in and out. And get ready for your second round of Bhastrika Pranayama. We do it in one movement. Breathe in and out only through the nose. Excellent! Oh, I'm proud of you. If a little sweat should come, that's desired. Ritasena. Five more. Go into the position. Just observe what is happening in your body. Maybe some lightness comes, maybe some circulation. Maybe also some parts rebel and a little stinge of pain is here and there because your muscles are not aligned yet. Whatever it is, just notice. This Bhastrika Pranayama I saw first in India at the banks of Ganga in Navadvip. No, in Haridwar. In Haridwar. It's common when you feel sleepy sometimes or you need to give a lecture and you really are in another space. It does help you. Slowly get ready for your third and last round of Bhastrika Pranayama. Okay, one last time, please. This time you can do it a little bit more forceful. Not necessarily breathing more forcefully, but just moving your arms with more awareness that something is happening. Huh? Okay, please start now. When you go down, you can almost imagine you pull yourself up, like in a pull-up, you know, on a branch of a tree or of an iron rod. Excellent. I notice some of you have difficulties to do it in harmony with the whole group. You seem to be an individualist.
down, up, down, up, down, up, down. No, up. You're from India. They do things different. If sweat comes, it is good, but if some of you are and try to really stretch your arms, touch the ceiling. Mrita Sena, you have so much space to go still to the ceiling. I thought you were long. I'm joking. I could do 500 more with you, but don't worry. We will do 4 more. 3. See, 1. And the last one. Thank you. Don't laugh. Now it's very important. Put your left hand under the navel, the right hand across it, and the ladies vice versa. Kindly sit tall. Close your eyes. Again, sit erect and gently relax your body. Bring your attention to your legs, feet, calves, the knee and above, just on an exhale, relax those parts. Bring your attention to the trunk of your body, starting from the behind. And just on an exhale, relax. Our goal is to become relaxed, to get rid of the tensions in our physical body, and to be incredibly aware. Go to your shoulders, please, with your attention. That's the part which is very tensed in most of our cases. And relax them together with the left and the right arm. Go now to your head. The different facial muscles which you use in your social interactions, and relax all of them. It is a safe environment. You don't need to impress anyone by smiling at them, greeting them. It's now time to relax. We want to go beyond the body, and we don't want an obstacle by the body. Now start watching your breath. In the Gita, Krishna says, Pranosmi, I am that prana which gives life. Become aware that all around you is air. As you breathe in that air. And breathe out. Maybe it will help you to concentrate on your breath.
while thinking, when you breathe in, in, and when you breathe out, you can just mentally repeat to yourself the syllable out. In, when you breathe in, and out, when you breathe out. Kindly bring your attention now to the heart space. Imagine there's a sun with light. Whenever you breathe in, the sun in the heart expands. A golden, pleasant color, warmth and light expands whenever you breathe in. Whenever you breathe out, the sun in the heart, which you see as an image, becomes slightly smaller. Not in any way threatening smaller, but just slightly smaller. The idea is to have a pulsating presence. Expands when you breathe in. It becomes slightly smaller as you breathe out. Stay for a little time with this practice until you will hear further instructions. The sun in the heart expands and contracts on an in and exhale. No need to think very much at this time. This is not about thinking, but about experiencing something. It's not about achieving something, but about receiving something. It is in this space of the heart that the soul, that is you, exists. When you find you, you find also the space in which the you exists, sacred space. I will read from the Gita now something which describes your identity as a spirit soul who exists in that sacred space. Listen carefully to the immortal words of Sri Krishna. Which pervades the entire body, you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. For the soul, there's neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He's unborn, eternal, ever existing and primeval. The soul is not slain when the body is slain. Now Krishna speaks about the birth and the death of the body which surrounds the eternal soul. He compares the body with a garment. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. Now Krishna speaks about the undisturbed position of the soul. Oh, the soul can never be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind. This soul is you. You can observe your body. It is like a shirt, a garment. You are sitting here in New Vrindavan, and your body is like a shirt which you have hung for a moment on the hanger of your skeleton. It's not you. After this exercise, you will again be in the body. You will move to different places through different stations in your life. But you are always a part and parcel of Krishna, an indestructible, unaffected soul. Just like you have gone through so many unexpected situations. You've gone to school, you've met friends and separated from friends. You will also in the future go to unexpected life situations. But it's only your body which becomes affected. You can just be the observer of what happens. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna brings us to the observer position. Speaks so beautifully. A person in this divine consciousness always knows that he actually does nothing at all. Although he is engaged in seeing and hearing and touching, smelling, eating, sleeping, breathing, a person in that spiritual consciousness knows that he actually does not do anything. He always knows that only the material body is engaged, only the material senses are interacting with their sense objects. But he himself is aloof from that. Srila Sukadev Goswami describes that as devotees whose minds are absorbed in the personality of Godhead remain peaceful even when attacked by all sorts of dangers, the mountains in the rainy seasons are not disturbed by the repeated striking of the rain-bearing clouds. See in your mind a mountain. Although the mountain is struck by torrents of water, he's washed of dirt. In the same way, the soul is unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. See in your mind's eye a mountain. A mountain how you like a mountain to be. See how beautiful it is. See its lofty peaks. Maybe your mountain has one peak, maybe a series of peaks, or a high plateau. Does it have snow on its peaks? Now see how the base of your mountain is rooted on the earth. See its steep or gently sloping sides. Now bring your body into the image of the mountain. Your head becomes the peak. Your shoulders and arms the sides of the mountains, and your buttocks and legs the solid rooted base. You know the mountain. It stays still then, even though the seasons change one into the other. The mountain remains the same, even though the weather changes day by day. In the same way, you are like that mountain. In your daily life, connect with your mountain. Learn to link with its strengths and stability, and use that for your own life. When things happen to you, notice how you can remain still, even in the moments of big changes in your life, even when thoughts, feelings, preoccupation, emotional storms and crises come over you. You are immovable, achala, still, just as a mountain, which always remains stable during big or small weather changes. continue to stay a little bit in that space, your sacred space, the space from which you can observe your body and also your thoughts. Just like the mountain is not affected by the passing clouds, you don't need to be affected by your passing thoughts. Do a few deep inhales and exhales. Rub your hands together. Bring them to your eyes, like palming. And then bring their hands away from your eyes and look into them. Look at the lines as if you're seeing them for the first time in your life. In this way, slowly return to the room awareness. In this little exercise, we have learned really two things. We have learned to connect ourselves with our spiritual essence. The way you can do that in your own personal lives is every morning and throughout the day, you can just gently withdraw your consciousness from the many reactions to the many things which you see, and just understand, I'm an eternal spiritual soul. And from that position, you can move to an observer position and observe something. I would like to give you a personal example. Today I'm very sad because of a friend's departure and because of a private reason. But I know that I'm an eternal soul. I can learn from these things, but it doesn't have to affect me. I can go to an observer position from which I just look at it. Let me give you another example. I'm now trying to slowly and gently bring you to another perspective. What I could do, for instance, now, I could mentally step away from the situation. And observe myself from that observer position as I'm talking to you, let me tell you what I can see. Thought, oh Satchinanda Swami, you're trying. You want them to understand something for their benefit. But I think you're sometimes too much like a German teacher. You should be a little bit more gentle, a little bit more relaxed, to culturally connect to your American audience. Watch what happens. Hi. And immediately I can connect better because Americans like hi and cool people and so on. Germans don't like them, but Americans like them. So you can understand how just this little step into the observer position helps even our communication, so that you start to laugh and feel more joyous and so on. This is a very, very interesting thing, which brings us to this image which Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Shukadev Goswami use, a very important image. Imagine you would have acted more maturely in your life. Imagine you would have acted more spiritually in your life. Imagine where you would be. Where you would be in your relationships. Where you would be in your realizations. Where you would be in your life. Imagine the possibilities which come as you learn the simple technique to simply detach and come to the position of the soul, where everything is really alright, and come from this joyous, light-filled perspective into your lives, look what is going on, and then see the opportunities which you have, not yet used, but which you can now use, and bring your life to an excellent level. I like so much how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, though the mountain, you know, you come to a mountain position, being, the Sanskrit word is achedyuyam. I'm sorry that the light is blinds. Can I just put it like this? Achedyuyam dashojam. Aklesho shesha evacha. You come free from suffering if you connect with your immovable, undisturbed essence. And you know, it's not an imagination, it is there. And I could see as you were doing, becoming a little meditative as you have come. Can you see the atmosphere in the room is totally changed? You are at a different space. It's even possible in the Hare Krishna movement. I'm sorry. Sometimes a little provoking. You know, I need my audience to learn something new. Here, though struck by torrents of water, the mountain does not shake, but rather becomes beautiful, being washed of dirt. Then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says how this holds true to in a life of all of us as devotees or aspiring devotees. Similarly, a devotee who is afflicted by the pains caused by his body, mind, or other entities is not disturbed because his mind is absorbed in the Supreme Lord, Adokshayachita. The Srimad Bhagavatam says that material pains cannot disturb the devotee who is absorbed in Krishna's loving service. Taking shelter of me, these devotees engage in constantly hearing and chanting about me. The various kinds of material miseries do not affect them because they are always filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. It means the devotees, just by connecting with Krishna, and Krishna's pastimes and qualities seem to associate with him in a spiritual way, through chanting and hearing, and in this way are brought into their sacred space, into their inner midst, you say in German, deine innere Mitte. And they stay there unaffected by anything and everything. Plus, when material miseries come or disturbances come, they are seen by the devotee just like the mountain sees the torrents of rain. These wash the mountains and make it free from dirt. So when a devotee who is fixed in that spiritual position experiences the torrents of miseries and sadness, he becomes washed of two things which are very difficult to give up. Pride is the first thing, and the second is envy or bad wish towards others. These are very difficult things. But if you enter your spiritual space and something comes, some disturbance in the outer world, you become more humble and you become more a well-wisher to all living entities and thus full of compassion. This is so good. Coming in the spiritual platform and understanding we are not the body and not the mind, you know, and being in this position, you can actually experience how the material experiences serves your spiritual upliftment. It serves it. For a devotee, thus, there is no misery any longer. There is no outer disturbance. There are only lessons which help him to go on his way to Krishna. But this only works if the devotee chooses to stay in his spiritual space, in his sacred space, and there associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My dear devotees, you might say, but this is a complex thing, this is difficult. I mean, you are now, you know, sometimes after such meditations, my audience says, Maharaj, you just please record what you just do, and then package it nicely with nice cover and nice pictures, and then I can buy it, and then I can put it on my CD recorder and hear it with profit. But it's just so simple. You have to do it yourself. You can do it yourself. You don't need a tape recorder or a CD recorder. You just, when you sit down, for instance, to chant your japa, your sacred spiritual practice, you chant it from a level of spirituality, not from a level of being disturbed in your mind. You just sit there for a moment and understand, I'm now calling for you, my Lord. I'm an eternal soul. I want to make the relationship. And then whenever something happens in your japa, like I sometimes tend to be a little fast in my japa, you know, I'm having the finger syndrome, I count too many beats in one round, then I can lovingly give me advices. No need to hurry and speed your practice. It's very, very simple. And I want to again say, it's a reality. It's not an imagination. It's not positive thinking. Positive thinking, in my words, in my understanding, is not always good because it ignores the reality. It's not that everything is positive and you think yourself into a highly happy state, and then pang, something happens which and reality catches hold of you again. No, this is the reality. What we experience now is only a temporary reality, just like a dream is a temporary reality. What we are teaching here is very simple steps in awakening to the reality that is. That is that you are an eternal spiritual soul. It's the first step in self-realization. It's not to be meant as a theoretical philosophical concept. It needs to be, notice Prabhupada say here, it's not simply a matter of saying it, I'm not this body, but of actually realizing it. And this realization will happen to you, guaranteed, if you just do these two simple steps. I'm an eternal soul, become mindful of it, because I'm still a very foolish person. I look into the mirror and I see an aging face with graying hair. And I'm just saying, that's not me, that's a mask. I know, you know, and that helps me. But I think you are more intelligent than me. You don't need a mirror to wake up. But if it helps, then you know, you put the tilak on every day, or look when you do your hygienic toothpaste operation, you know, then you have a mirror before you. It might help you to just understand it's not me, especially when you're in the morning and you don't look so alert yet. You know, it's easy to say that's not me. It's easy to realize that's not me. And then the next step is during your life, do something where you observe. Just like I can observe you and you can observe me, and that's possible because I'm not you and you are not me. So the very fact that I'm observer means I'm different from the thing I'm observing. So just sometimes become the detached observer. Once in Berlin, I said this to the people in the open center. I confessed something which happened to me when I became the observer. I had just been given a new Mercedes-Benz. Preachers need a car which is reliable, and that car was highly reliable. It was blue-gray, the color. I still could see it through my eyes. It had the Mercedes star there, and before that I had a car which always broke down, and this never broke down. It was really the supercar. And I must say, subtly, I think I have developed a relationship to the car. So I remember it was in Berlin Kreuzberg, you know, the town where there live a lot of punks and people who steal things and you know, those who hear the word Kreuzberg know what that means in Berlin. It's like Harlem in New York. I do remember giving a lecture. Subject matter was detachment, loslassen. And I was lecturing, and in the midst of the lecture, I all of a sudden heard that crashing sound of metal on metal. I knew someone had driven into my new brand new Mercedes-Benz. You know, that like metal on metal. Oh no. I knew I should not have brought this car to Kreuzberg, was my first reaction. The second reaction was profound grief. Now again, I have to go in these little, you know, $150 cars which always break down, you know, and oh no, this is very, very bad, you know, very, very, very nice. And I do remember this very much. And then I said to my audience, I have to just interrupt this lecture for 5 minutes. This lecture on detachment. I need a little break here, you know. I remember I was, and you know, they said, no problem. You know, I said something like, I have to use the restroom and so on. But I just immediately, like a bee who goes for the experience, I was going, jumping to this window to see how big the damage was, you know. And when I look down, profound joy overwhelmed me, because the car in question was not my own car, but the car just before that. Someone had driven into it and was utterly ruined, you know, it was not drivable any longer. So then I leaned back, then I became serious. Okay, and there I learned for the first time the observer role. That car is not my own car. Why should, it's only a car, a vehicle, it's not me. Why should I be so disturbed? Life will go on. And what happens is anyway bound to happen due to karmic reason. So I can't hold the big wave of life at bay. That's not possible. Let it roll, let it roll, let it roll on by its own laws. Why should I be so attached? I'm here giving a lecture on detachment, you know. Should it only be a theory? And it is there where I became, for the first time, really serious. I must understand this not in theory. It's not a matter of simply saying it. I must do that in my practical life. And I believe the Hare Krishna movement, with a few very, very exalted exceptions, has yet to learn the first step in self-realization. I strongly believe it, because I myself am learning, and I'm supposed to be, you know, whatever. So I'm really encouraging you to enter this school. Don't be too proud and say, I want to hear about Ashtayama Leela and so on. Just start there. And also hear about Krishna, of course. I'm not saying this should not be done. But do this and work on it every day. You know, I'm not the body, and observe what is happening, and don't become disturbed like a child of 2 years by the ups and downs of life. Huh? It's very, very important. Otherwise, it will remain a theory what we practice, and we will not gain the real jewels. Practice being the mountain. I like this so much, this mountain meditation, of which I took from the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, and so on. And this can happen if you access that place where you are the mountain, where you are Achala and Achetya and Akletyo and so on. Where you are immovable, like the Gita says. The soul is immovable and always the same. A little while ago, a few years ago, I received a postcard from Vrindavan. One of the boys who had been in the Krishna Leelas, you know, they make these Krishna Leelas where the boys are dressed up as personas of the divine Leela, had a terrible accident, and his leg had been broken, the flesh had been cut, and it was rotting. And he said he was there in a cast, and, you know, it was too hot and so on. And the boy's life was ebbing away. And the devotee who informed me, Tulsi, said, I've never seen this. This boy is not distressed. He understands. That's my karma. Yes. And he understands. He is a soul. He is going back to Krishna. And he sits there. He lies there smiling, so gently waiting for his ship to come. And boy are like these children. They are very, you know, responsive to stimuli which come from outside. A boy, a simple boy, farmer's boy, and so on. It's necessary to come to this. then in our life we will not pretend to be devotees and saints, but it will come from a deep place within. So before taking questions, I'm almost finished. I would like to say, to bring one last thing to your attention. To practice the spiritual position in everyday life, I encourage you to learn the emotional traffic light method. When you see something is happening, an impulse is coming, which normally would upset you, switch on red. Stop. Stop your response. Then go on yellow, alertness. What would be the best way to respond to this for the benefit of the other person and my own benefit? And then switch a third time, switch to green. Now go with this new realization which you have gleaned by stepping into the observer position, the spiritual position, and then your life will change. Within 1 week, you won't believe how your life looks. Emotional traffic light. That helps a lot. It's, let me say, a practical application of I'm not the body and I can observe, like that verse from the Gita which I read to you when you were a little bit calm and peaceful, huh? That the soul knows while giving and taking and smelling and eating, it's only the body, but the soul itself remains unmoved. I want to now ask you for any questions which you have, and then we will make a fantastic devotional exercise where we will be able to do this. We will do kirtan, the glorification of our beloved Lord, from the spiritual position, not from the position of the mind. What the, you will see, we will do in a minute. So first, let me see. Any questions? Unfortunately, because the light is in my eyes, not due to meditation, but due to the things here, I won't be able to see. So just, yes, I see something there stirring in the audience, please. What is your good name, please? Gopi Manjari. My God, this is a name. Gopi Manjari, what can I do for you?
Maharaj, I'd like to ask, this responding, trying to respond with the sense of not the body, can we allow ourselves to feel emotion as you go through something still? Because there's a tendency, I feel, to negate having an emotional response. So I, you know, like, even though the traffic light response, you might, and do the right thing, respond correctly, but
where are the emotions?
The emotions still might be.
Very good, Gopi Manjari. Are you the Gopi Manjari who teaches yoga?
Yes, Maharaj.
Then I don't see you, but we know each other, right?
Yes.
Good, good. I don't see you. Yes. Good. I met Shiva Ray, by the way. So anyways, that is a very good question. I personally feel human emotions are very, very important for us. If we are stifling our emotions, human emotions, there will be a blockage in our system which we will feel during our interactions. We must allow our emotions to be there, but we can always have to be on parallel lines. See, in spiritual life, you know you are not the body, that is one line, but you also feed the body and you take care of it. You have to sometimes sleep and eat and so on and so forth. So you are a caretaker of your body and an emotion. I found out especially there are a few things which you should never suppress. For instance, sadness. You must go through it. Then it's like the Ayurveda tells us, never suppress your bodily urge like going to the bathroom. You should always go when it comes, because you create damage if you keep it in too long. In the same way, there is emotional hygiene. You should allow sadness and grieving and so on to be there. If you are not, then you will block your life. Like I do remember, we were having the burial of a very dear devotee. And then in that burial, there was one congregational member who thought, you know, and everyone was crying. It was a very dear devotee who had left the body. And in that burial, there was a congregational member who now thought she had to show that she is more spiritual than the rest of the world. And she said, "Why are you crying? It's only the body who died, you know." In the midst of the, imagine, in the midst of the burial, it was just so out of place, you know. And this congregational member, I know, as I'm preaching in Germany, is a very troubled person, you know, very troubled person, because when someone leaves and who's dear, we grieve for a short while, you know, we let this get out so that we can move on with life. It's a human reaction. It's on the human platform. It needs to be done. I think, Gopi Manjari, your observation comes from you have looked at the Bodhis and seen that in the name of detachment, they have sometimes tried without realization to just stifle human emotions and acted inhumanly and then acted faulty also towards others. I think we all are aware of that. The rage of the peaceful renunciant, the inner anger which torments him because he suppresses his life. I think we know that that rage of the that inner rage of the peaceful renunciant is a theme which we meet in the scriptures also, when all of a sudden great yogis flip out and do something against devotees like Dovasha, against Ambarish and so on. That unacknowledged rage of the saint, you know. Yes, because he is not living on the different levels. But see, when you are emotional and you have that understanding that you are a spiritual person, that you are a spiritual soul, if you have that understanding, your response will be a little bit different, you know, not a little, very different. Only a person who is in love, Raga Bhakti it's called, only that person has his emotions already totally transferred in the spiritual platform of Krishna. He may not, for him different rules hold true. Divine absorption. That's something we aspire for. That was a wonderful question. Thank you very much. I hope I have addressed the question. I'm not sure, because I can't see you, so I can only also see only half of your question. That is what I hear. But if I would see your face, I would see the other half of the question. Do you know that we communicate not only with words, but with everything else? Good. Yes. From there. yes, I am. Yes, Hare Krishna. Hare Bo. What is your good name, Prabhu?
Naveen Krishna
Prabhu. Yes.
I have this question about emotional traffic light option.
What emotional atrophied?
No,
traffic light. Traffic light. Yes.
So, yeah, typically it seems to be for me, and Rahul Kumar said a good option sometimes we can use it. But then sometimes life is so dynamic.
Thank you.
So it won't come and tell us what kind of things is coming next. So we have to skip some of the lights in a different order. So in that situation, how do we practice being mountain?
When life is so hectic, you mean, and so demanding?
So demanding, how do we
maintain that?
Yeah.
By the way, be yourself, you know. but I understand the question. See, here the role of sadhana comes in. When you practice, when you do your spiritual practice, ideally in the morning it should be done, before the hectic life breaks over you like a wave which comes. When you had a sadhana, a spiritual practice in the morning, whatever that is, then your state of consciousness, which is created there during these precious minutes and hours, will inform the rest of your day. Even though you are in the midst of it, in the thick of it, it will inform you. Like I'm reminded of Arjuna, who was fighting on Krishna's behalf the battle of Kurukshetra. You know, they're fighting you here. Always, you know, it was always action. Krishna told him, think of me while you do your duty of fighting. How can he think of Krishna when the arrow, Brahmastra, front Brahmastra, counter Brahmastra, you know, and so on. How to do that? He does it because he's a general devotee, as a big devotee, Arjuna ji, and that informs what he does. So my advice to you is have a morning program, which is your morning program, and whatever state you have there, that will inform the rest of your life and your decision in it. That is very, very good. And then you will have the protection of the Lord also, because you have connected with Him. In the battle of Kurukshetra, there is a very, very nice detail which you must know. I'm dedicating this particular story to Damodar Prabhu, my driverji, who brought me from the Pittsburgh airport to this holy place. A very unforgettable charity he did. There was a bird. The armies were confronting each other for deadly combat, and the bird was there. He came, took to Krishna's chariot, which Krishna was driving, and he began to speak. I can't believe with my own eyes, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his devotees are ready to engage in deadly violence. Don't you know that peace will not come by aggression? So Krishna smiled and looked at Arjuna and said to and hinted, you answer this question. So the bird said, so Arjuna said to the bird, little bird, sometimes you have to remove a thorn in the body which pains by another thorn. In the same way, there are situations where injustice, which is perpetrated in the body, the dharmic body of humanity needs to be removed by violence. Therefore, this war. Ah, said the bird, you always have the better arguments. But see, I'm a ground breeding bird. And I have just now created a comfortable home in Kurukshetra. And soon you will roll over this home and destroy all my efforts at building and construction. Please, can't you do your war somewhere else? Do we have to do it where I just built my house? Krishna knew, of course. And so he said to Arjuna, Arjuna nodded his head. He took his Gandiva bow. Mind you, the battle had not begun. The conscience had not been blown. The rules in which this which would inform the battling had not been announced. It was all pre-battle history, which you hear. Arjuna took his Gandiva, he placed an arrow at the other army, and like, oh no, why this has not begun? Why does he already start? And you know, was all afraid, where will he shoot? Who will be the dead person? The arrow came, it made clunk as it touched the bell of an elephant, and the bell flew somewhere. That's all. No casualty. The battle raged for 18 long days. The battleground became moistened with the blood of many warriors. And on the 18th day, it was all over. Krishna says to Arjuna, now let's go in the middle of the battlefield. They went in the middle of the battlefield. There was a bell. Take this bell up, said Krishna to Arjuna. Arjuna took the bell up, and underneath the bell there was this bird with his family. And then the bird went, thank you. I was safely protected all this while. Now Krishna took care of even a little bird devotee. Little bird. And he will take care of all of us also. But we have to connect with him. That's why this morning, the sacred morning hour, before you go into your job with all your hectic life and so on, you have to connect, you have to pray, you have to chant, you have to do your puja. And then Krishna will make a bell around you and you will be all right. If you don't do it, if you don't connect, life will roll over you without protection, and that can be very cruel. Very cruel. How do you like this particular story? It's wonderful, no? Yes, I see another hand back there. Yes, Prabhu, what is your good name?
My name is Bhavin.
Bhavin? Bhavin, yes, please. A microphone is there.
You talked about doing spiritual sadhana early in the morning. So, what practices do you recommend doing early in the morning? That will be the beginning of this platform that we are not destroying the spirit.
Yeah. Bhavin, I don't know how much you're connected to our movement, so I will tell you the general practice. The general practice is there should be prayers in the morning to those who you take shelter of, Guru and Krishna. Samsara prayers are very good, and then some prayers to Krishna. And then glorifying his name through the process of japa. And then there should be a little svadhyaya, shastra study. These two things, prayer, japa, and study in the scriptures. These three things are good package, so to say. You can ask the devotees who are here for some good prayers, some samsara prayers, if you are not already aware. Yes, Maharaj. What is your good name?
Shatirupa Vinyas.
Shatarupa Devidasi. There is a microphone. Can we pass it to Shatarupa? Here, this microphone. Simple and the specific answer is maybe a little bit more intricate. The general answer is practice, practice, and practice again. And the specific answer you spoke about being judgmental at times is, you know, when you're judgmental, you come in a certain mind frame, you see people in a certain light. And you might also feel how your relationship to these people suffers, and so on and so forth, and how you come. My suggestion is, after you have gone through a period of being judgmental with a certain person or a certain situation or whatever, review what has happened. And then decide how next time when you come in a similar situation where your response are triggered by the actions of these people or the situation itself, review and then imagine what you will do the next time. I want to give you an example. I become very disturbed when, you know, I have to eat after after I've given classes, and I have to then, you know, just eat and then get ready for the next session on a workshop day. And what totally is disturbing me, there are always so many people who come and then I can't eat. Very often I have not eaten breakfast because so many people are there. But then I'm not able to do my service very nice because I'm thinking all the time of eating while I talk. You know, I'm so hungry. So often when people came after a lecture to appreciate or to ask a question or to challenge my points, I've turned them off saying like, I have no time. And I've often noted that I have heard people. They only come to have an interchange with, and I have heard them and they felt their faces were, and you can never talk to the to any Maharaj and so on. So I have said I will be very kind to everyone who comes. And today I did it. Someone came and my response was, I really need to eat. Already my secretary has for the second time said, you need to eat now. It's already high time and so on. And this time I decided to not explode, but to be very kind. And then the person pulls out a $500 donation to me. Amazing. And sometimes we need also a little, I don't want to say we need Lakshmi, because then otherwise everyone thinks we have to give this poor person, you know, but sometimes Lakshmi is required in life, and I thought, oh, good that I was kind, because if I would have turned him off, the same result would not have come, you know. Naturally, he would have given it in the donation box. I shouldn't say this when Jai Krishna is around. It was not you, Dinanath, it was someone else. Dinanath is looking at me and thinking. So this is what I want to say here is, reflect when you do something judgmental and such, which doesn't come from the spirit of vision, and give yourself loving tips. Like today, I was kind to that person because I had understood. I can just kindly say, well, at the moment I'm a little pressed for time, but would it suit you if we meet after the workshop? Then I have a little time, no? Like this. And you can. And so that traffic light is very useful, Chaturupa. Very useful. And if you always, you know, go without putting first the think motion in, you know, then you review what happens and you decide next time this is not going to happen. And then when the same situation comes, because you have programmed a different response, you will go by that. This is amazing. I'm very, very eager to keep the time. If you have further questions, there is opportunity to ask them. Please keep the question on parking. We will now close this workshop session with a little kirtan, singing Hare Krishna. Is our Madanga player G here? Is the Madanga here? We have to ask. Yes, no? You are going to get the Madanga, Prabhu? Is it true? Good.